Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Data Exposed. It's a great day, and I've got with me David McAgon. Wonderful, I've known David for a while. David, why don't you introduce yourself before we get started?
So just curious, is the great day because I'm here?
It's a great day because you are here. Exactly. We could stop right now because David's here.
Okay, well, thanks for joining. No, I'm David McAgon. I work in the DX team. I do architecture, Azure architecture. And for the past few years, I've been really focused on a lot of OSS database stuff.
Okay, more open source stuff or just kind of, is that a more...
So people are putting their applications in Azure, and that's part of the data story is where can I host my data? Yeah. And of course, we know about the relational data stores. We have SQL and SQL database in Azure. And then they're asking what kind of NoSQL stores can I use? And okay, there's lots of them.
Yep.
And then they say, well, which ones run in Azure and what type of database should I use? You know, we have so many different.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting one. And that's kind of why our topic today is because NoSQL is sort of the a big topic, right? And so you've got our relational, non-relational, but now from a NoSQL standpoint, you know, what are there and what are our options, right?
Well, and it's kind of weird. NoSQL doesn't really have meaning anymore, right? It just means it's not a SQL database.
Yeah, not a relational, right.
And we have key value stores. Yeah. Like Azure has table storage, but any key value store is considered NoSQL.
Yep.
There are document stores. So, I mean, we have them all over the place, right? We've heard of MongoDB and others, especially
Cassandra.
Ones. Well, Cassandra is not a document store. They'd be more of a column-oriented store.
The couch, and things like that, right?
Yep.
And a lot of these we even have hosted in Azure, right? We can host in Azure.
Right. So you could self-host, mm-hmm. or you can go with a hosting provider.
Right.
Right. And then there's, I guess, a lesser-known type of NoSQL database called mm-hmm. a graph database.
Okay. That's kind of what we're going to talk about today. Why David's here is because David and I were chatting not too long ago, and we were talking about graph database. And I thought, that'd be an interesting topic for Data Exposed, and so. What is a graph database, and how does that differ? You know, how's that different from, you know, the Azure, you know, Azure tables, the kind of the key value pair or the document databases?
Right. So if you think about going back to the SQL roots, you have tables that are they have a specific type of schema, specific data, and then you can relate them to another table.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So then, if we don't want the particular schema restrictions in a SQL database, then we start looking at maybe a document database mm-hmm. where now I can have collections of key value data in a single document.
Right.
And it's really flexible what I store there. And now it's up to your application to link documents in different collections.
Okay.
Like maybe I have a collection of movies, a collection of actors, and you say, well, this movie had this actor in it. So typically, it's at the application layer where you're yep. connecting the two. But the strength of that document database is really powerful search, and really it's almost SQL-like in nature.
Oh, okay. Right. Good.
So the thing with a graph database is you have two fundamental things in a graph database. You have a node, and you have a relationship.
Okay.
So two nodes can be connected by a relationship, or more than one relationship. And the relationship itself is a first-class citizen of the database. So it's physically stored as a connected pair of nodes. And you can have one or more relationships between nodes, or zero or more. You can have inbound relationships, outbound relationships. And then both the nodes and the relationships can have properties. So maybe you have an actor node,
mm-hmm.
and one of the properties is the actor's name.
Okay.
A movie node, or you have the title of the movie. And maybe you have an acted in relationship.
Okay.
And maybe there's a property on that relationship that says actor name or character name or something.
Right. Okay.
Right. So
this is interesting.
Okay. Yeah. So the idea is you can traverse those relationships very easily. And if you think about what it would take, like in a typical ordering system where you have customers and orders and products.
Right.
And think for a customer, what orders do they have? In a SQL database or any type of relational database, very simple to traverse that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then to go from orders to products. But what about if you wanted to find out everybody who ordered a particular product? now you're searching the other direction. And unless you've constructed your database in such a way to handle that, that's a lot of work.
Interesting, okay.
So with a graph database, you'd be able to just take a product node for a particular product ID and fan out and find out who has inbound relationships, which orders have inbound relationships to it. So maybe there's only 10 orders, right, but you would have those immediately. It's the connected relationships. And then from those orders, you can look at the distinct customers.
That's interesting. It lends the question. So we've got these, you know, kind of the Azure table, NoSQL, key value pair. And then we've got the, okay, let me put these in a collection type of document store. And now we have the graph. Is there a case where, and maybe we discuss this a little later, but is there a case where I would say, I would use, in what instance or what scenario I would use this versus in what instance or scenario I would use this? Does that make sense? Do you see things going, hey, this is, or, you know, things moving toward a more graph scenario?
I think they're actually going the other way. I think it's how many can I use? So.
Oh, really?
So think about the situation with SQL 10, 20 years ago, and SQL database was really the only type of database.
Right.
Sometimes there were challenges fitting a particular idea into the SQL database.
Sure.
Maybe it was variable schema, so we created property tables.
Yeah.
Well, now we're searching text-based properties to try and find commission rate or something,
right,
because that's an optional field on something.
Sure.
But there's other databases that handle optional data really well, like document.
Yep.
Okay. So why not use both of them together? And why not use graph database for what it does well? So we'll go back to the movie database.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're keeping track of people that rented or bought a movie.
Right.
That might be really a great fit for your SQL database. But if we want to find out who's watching the movies and who's rating the movies and making recommendations on movies, maybe that fits in a graph database.
More in a graph database, right. So yeah, I'm not, yeah, more of a complement type situation, but you know, because you have your relational and then these NoSQL non-relational, but
mm-hmm.
more of, you know, you have Azure tables, these document, do they complement each other, just like we were saying, do they complement each other, or do you see things from a NoSQL more migrating to, from a functionality standpoint, great, I can use Azure tables for this in this scenario, mm-hmm. but I can use graph database for this, or from a NoSQL, do you see people migrating more toward graph, or are they still all complementary?
I think they're complementary.
Okay.
I mean, you still have to have a system of record. So if you have a customer mm-hmm. with a customer ID, maybe it's a GUID, where do you store the master data about the customer?
Yeah.
Right. Probably in a SQL database or a document database, somewhere where everything about that customer, that's your system of record.
Okay.
So maybe now you want to know what the customer did, and it's they're watching movies or they're purchasing or renting something. Maybe that fits in a graph database, and you identify the customer there by customer ID, and maybe one or two properties like their name.
Okay.
But you wouldn't have the graph database at that point as the system of record because you have it somewhere else.
Okay.
So you might be sharing some data. Likewise, you might be using table storage and you have the customer ID as maybe your partition key.
Okay.
And
yep.
the row ID for some action they're doing, like renting.
Right.
And then you have the
the
movie data that they rented, the movie ID in the additional fields of
okay.
the table.
Yeah, it's interesting just because I think others are going to have the same question as, you know, and I'm not going to pretend to be a NoSQL guru or especially I know nothing about graphs, but been playing with Azure tables for a long time, been doing a little bit with some of the document storage solutions, mm-hmm. but you know this the graph seems fairly, you know, a much more, I don't want to call it mature, but you know, there's, you know, I can do relationships, like you say, and I can do some of these things that, to me, it says, yeah, I can use some of these for certain scenario, you know, better scenarios. But you know, if they're complementary, this is awesome. So, can we look at something, or do you have something to show?
Sure, we can take a look and see what it looks like.
Perfect. Okay, great.
So, for today, let's just pick one of the popular open source graph databases.
Okay.
There are a handful of graph databases. But like I said, it's not quite as well known a database type. So
right.
this particular one is Neo4j.
Okay.
It's an open source database. What's nice about it is there's a free community edition. Anyone can download and install
okay.
it. If you're building open source projects, then you're licensed to use it as well.
Oh, nice.
They
okay.
have an enterprise edition, which has HA, and you could basically replicate across multiple servers.
Oh, okay.
Right.
For scale and things like that, right?
Yep. Okay. And we worked with the folks at Neo Technology to make sure that it was compatible with Azure from an installation perspective. So not only do they have an entire cloud portal on their site, but they have full instructions for...
on how to deploy this to Azure.
Yep.
Sweet.
Yep. And it's typically Linux-based. It'll run on Windows, but the installation that they published shows how to install it on Linux.
So I'd spin up like an Azure VM running Linux and mm-hmm. just deploy this to that VM.
Yep, and I actually did that. So I have a VM running right now, and it was really simple to install.
Okay.
And launch, and then you could store your data. If you're running in Azure, you could either store it locally if you're just playing around, or you can attach a disk, and now you have a good 1 terabyte for your data store.
For your data storage.
Yep.
And how long did it take you to get that set up?
Just a couple minutes.
Couple minutes?
Yeah, it's a few scripts you have to run.
The benefits of Azure.
So, for today, why don't we just run locally? Since this is running in East Asia, a little latency. Right? It was actually really simple to install locally, and I'm running a server in the background here, but you just download the bits and it untars right to a folder with a bin directory, and you just say Neo4j start.
Perfect.
Right. It is Java-based, so you have to have the latest version of Java. You can also run OpenJDK, which I'm running on my Linux VM.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
So the whole idea, again, of these graph databases is we're thinking in terms of nodes and relationships.
Okay.
Right? So we might have something, and the way that the query language works in Neo4j, it's called Cypher. And if you're a Matrix fan, you can start seeing the theme here. We have Neo and Cypher.
Oh, that's awesome.
Right. But everything is done with ASCII art.
See, at this point, we need to throw up a little image of the of Neo or something from the movie.
the way that you express the queries,
yep.
I mean, they have a native query API,
mm-hmm.
but Cypher is their query language, much easier for humans to consume.
Okay.
So we might have a movie we want to search for, and there's labels, which is their form of indexing.
Oh, okay.
So we might say M is our variable, and it's of type movie. And we can then return m.title. Now, of course, that's kind of nutty because there's like 50,000 movies here.
So you get a big long list.
Right, right. So we could always say limit 2 or something and just see what it returns us. So we have Avatar and some other movie. I'm not even
going to try to pronounce that.
Right. But we can certainly do some more advanced queries. Like I just have a couple of examples here. In this particular query, and this really shows more of sort of the power of what you can do with this language. So again, it's ASCII art. Anything in parentheses is a node.
Okay.
Right. Then we have the brackets here. This is our relationship, and then we have the direction of the relationship, doing that ASCII arrow thing. So in this case, you can express relationships in either direction. So here, I have a particular actor. So whoever this person is acted in some movie.
Okay.
But also directed some other movie. And we're using two variables, right? M for the movie they acted in and D for the movie they directed. And then we could return the actor's name, a collection of all the movie titles that they appeared in, and a collection of all the movies
they directed.
That they directed. And so let's just shrink my window a little bit. And what I'm doing, I'm working with the server itself has an interactive console.
Okay.
So this makes it very, very easy to work with Neo4j.
Perfect.
When you're first learning it. So I'll run this query. And so what this is saying is this actor here appeared in these two movies and actually directed these movies. So it looks like they acted and directed in the same movie. So let's take a look at this query that we just ran. We're saying a particular movie has been rated by anybody.
Okay.
Right? We haven't specified any parameters for the one node. What this is saying is any node that has a relationship called rated going into the movie, we pull the movie's title, and we're doing an on-the-fly aggregation. We're saying, for this movie, which has properties, so the relationship itself has a property called stars.
Okay.
So anyone can rate a movie from
one to five stars.
So on the fly, we'll take the average rating for all of the inbound relationships to the movie.
Okay.
Okay. And what we're saying, as long as the average is greater than four, we're going to return the title of the movie and what the average was. And then we'll just sort it descending.
Okay.
So in my database, we have these movies which are all at least a four in average rating.
You know, what's interesting here is there is, like you were saying, it's, I think we were talking about this earlier, there's almost T-SQL-like syntax to some degree, right? I mean, you're not, there's no select, you know, select star type of scenario, but, you know, with, where, order by, you know, it's, so it looks like it wouldn't take a whole lot to get started with if you're kind of a relational guy. Might not take a long time to get up and running with Neo4j or you know, these graph type databases syntax.
Yeah, the Cypher language is fairly easy to learn.
Yeah, I like that, and it looks like it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, and again, what's nice is built into the server itself, there's this nice exposed way of working with queries built right into the server. And you'll also get a few hints about your data. It'll mm-hmm. tell you what type of labels exist in your database and what type of relationships you have in your database. So this gives you a very nice bird's eye view of the type of things.
Yeah, graphical is, has my database structured.
Sure.
Yep. Very nice. Yep.
And certain data is also amenable to graphing. So they do have an option where you can visualize some data. So
now, when I set this database up, how do I define these nodes? How do I define the relationships? Or are they automatically defined? Or do I have to, you know, when I create a database and create my nodes, what's the process for defining my relationships?
There's just a set clause.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I mean, maybe we're looking for the movie with, let's say, Avatar. So let's just return Avatar real quick.
Okay.
Let's go back to the tabular view. So we can see there's some properties for Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
Now maybe we want to modify the data. So instead of returning it, we want to say, I don't know, set m.foo equals 5. So it's always good to mess with a movie in my database. So now if we go back and query and look at the properties of Avatar, scroll down, there we have foo
so
at the end.
So you just added a foo property.
Yep. So it's really that simple.
Okay, so through the same syntax is how you're setting and defining your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Yeah, so maybe you want to find a movie like Avatar, and then you found out that David wanted to review it.
Okay.
So you could search for the David node, which is a person, search for the Avatar node, which is a movie, and then you can create the relationship.
This is pretty powerful. I really like this.
Now what's nice is there's also a visualizer built in.
Okay.
So in this particular query, I'm just curious to know who rated the movie The Matrix.
Okay.
So here's our query. And if we take a look, we just returned it in tabular format.
Yeah.
And we can see the movie on the left, right? And then we can see all the people as we scroll through on the right.
Now, who rated the movie?
Right.
Okay.
So if we go down here, there's a feature for graphing.
Okay.
And so now we're looking at the same query in a graphical format. And so all these different people rated the Matrix. If we stretch it out a little bit, we also see that there's other relationships tucked in there. So this person rated the Matrix, this person rated the Matrix, and look at this, they're friends.
Oh, interesting.
So it exposed a couple of other relationships, and then we could always click down on one to see the
information
person,
about that user. Yep.
Right, and other properties that they had.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, again, it's a nice way to be able to traverse
a nice graphical way to view your database and view the relationships of the of your database and the kind of the query you just executed.
Yep.
Perfect. Where do you see these graph databases going in the next, let's say, 6, 12, 24 months or beyond? I mean, how long have these been around?
Several years.
Several years.
Neo4j has been around for a few years. Okay. There's other graph databases that are either open source or not. Some of them are enterprise only, so yep. you buy these big commercial licenses for them.
Yeah.
I think the most important thing for graph databases, like what we're looking at right now, it's a yep. standalone server, and we know that we have HA, so we could run multiple instances of it for durability, but how does that scale out?
Right.
Right now it's a scale-up model. And we have some fairly large VMs in Azure today, you know, 16 cores, 112 gigs of RAM, so as we've learned from some document databases like MongoDB, when people try and run these, they're memory hungry.
Yeah.
So databases, document databases tend to scale out really well.
Okay.
At least with Neo4j, we only have a scale-up scenario. And when you scale out with HA, you could always do queries from your additional instances, but you can't do writes except to the master.
Oh, right, okay.
So I think it's key as we're growing in data size. Terabytes is not how we're measuring things anymore.
Yeah,
petabytes, right. Yeah. Well, I don't work with anyone with zettabytes yet.
But we'll get there. And probably sooner than we think. But.
So I really think it's important that we have the fan out capability. I think drivers are going to be key. What's nice about Neo4j is there's an open source project called Neo4j Client, mm-hmm. which is a .NET client.
Oh, really?
And it's really simple to use, and you just create a new client object pointing to the database, and then you actually create a cipher query. You express your cipher query right in your .NET expression.
And go.
And that's it. So it uses almost identical syntax to what we're doing. So having a rich .NET client, there are certainly clients. I mean, the J is Java, so there's right. a great Java stack for it. But in order to get widespread adoption, we need driver support.
Right.
So some of the databases out there are better than others with the community and the driver support. And when we're talking with enterprise partners, they're going to be concerned with security and how do you connect to the database? How do you secure your connection?
Yep.
Right. Now, hopefully we can hide most of that. So if you look at something like Azure websites or mobile services, where you're now creating a stack, maybe it's a REST API, or going through the web where people are accessing that way, and then on the back end, you're reaching out to your database.
Sure.
Security is not the same, right? We're not worried about the exact same things. But still, can my data be encrypted? Can anyone get to my data if they had the right access rights?
Sure.
So these are concerns.
Okay. But we'll see some of these. Are these things that we can solve now, or are these things we'll see over the next few months, couple years, or?
No, well, I think some of these problems are being worked on now.
Right now.
I mean,
okay.
From a security standpoint, already you could use something like mobile services with Neo4j. Oh,
yep.
I mean, I've had no problem doing that. So I worry about the security of the mobile services.
Right.
How does your mobile app connect to mobile services? And then the back end can access the database. As far as fan out, I'm not sure what plans they have here. There's other databases that
do fan out. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And maybe what we'll do is we'll come back and revisit this later on to see where we're at mm-hmm. in the next, in a few more months or 6 months, and see, you know, what's from a fan out and from a scalability, high availability, what they're doing in that space.
Sure. And what I like about working with some of these databases is the community involvement.
Yeah.
So what type of activities can you participate in? And for this one in particular, they do a lot of webcasts. They have conferences and user groups. So it's really not too difficult to get involved.
And that was going to be my next question is, you know, if people wanted more information or mm-hmm. wanted to learn more about, you know, what some of these graph databases like Neo4j, where can they go? So like Neo4j, probably find on their homepage, you know, local user groups, local webinar, you know, some webinars. Things like that?
Yep, and neo4j.org has all of that. Now, what I showed today, the movie mm-hmm. database, which I think is one of the really cool things, is they have sample data. So, a little buried link at the bottom of their page.
Sample data sets.
Yeah, so I mean, I was showing the movie database, But of course, I have a daughter who's a Doctor Who fiend.
So, who doesn't?
So not that she's
got one myself.
She's not a programmer. But I showed her what graph databases were, going through the Doctor Who database, and then she started doing her own queries, and I lost control of the machine. But it's just nice that
you can turn into a programmer eventually through Doctor Who.
Right. It's great that you could just grab some of these sample data sets and start working.
Start playing with them. Yeah. And like you said, you can run this locally, right? And start work at these data sets locally, just so you don't have to go spin up a, does Neo4j have a playground you can go play with, or does it say, hey, download it locally and run locally?
There's actually an online training.
Okay.
Yeah, so during the online training, you're typing in all your queries online.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Perfect. So this is great.
And I should mention, I have this running on Windows just as easily as far as the latest version.
Yep, okay.
So, you know, it's whatever version number, 213 or something. You just download the bits, you run it.
And go, and you're up and running.
Yep.
So this is exciting, because I'm starting to, I might have to start playing with graph databases myself, because I'm familiar with, you know, Azure Table Storage and some of these NoSQL scenarios and starting to get into the some of these document databases. But this is, I think you will see more and more people start moving toward graph databases just because of what we've seen here and some of the functionality to complement, like we talked about, to complement a relational and some of these other NoSQL features and functionalities, you know, products.
Yeah, and there's actually a buzzword. I think Martin Fowler coined it polyglot persistence.
Yeah.
Right, the idea of using multiple databases together.
Yeah, I think interesting. Well, thank you, David. I appreciate you coming. Again, this is because David's here. It's a great day.
I think maybe it's because Scott's here.
Well, we've got, what's interesting is, you know, we've got a bunch of people in just for what's happening this week at Microsoft. So we've got a lot of people coming in. I think most of Microsoft is here.
Oh, it's
here
a
in
huge
Redmond.
Week. We have Tech Ready going on.
S4. There's
this big hackathon going on.
Yep.
Right?
It's
1 week, right?
Yeah, one week. Yeah. So it's hard to walk around campus because there's just so many people. Yep. But David, thank you for coming. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right. So take care. We'll see you next time.
All right, bye.